We've been in a series, Growing in Faith. We started in January, and I give a little recap each week for people that are coming in new or haven't been in a little while to kind of catch up, so you don't feel like you're coming in halfway through a movie and you have no idea what's going on. But we've used this Psalm 1:1-3. The whole idea, growing in faith, we're here because we want to experience Jesus to be real in our lives. We don't want to go through the motions of just checking a box and going to church. We want our faith to be real. If you're here, I think everybody would say, I want my doubts to be dispelled. We all have doubt. We all struggle with that. But I want to feel and know that this invisible God is real in my life. So every week we're reading this. Blessed is the one whose delight is in the law of the Lord, who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. There's blessing in relationship with God. And I just love this visual image of being a tree planted by streams of water with green leaves all the time. But it's the one who meditates on his law, who spends time with God, who spends time with God's people, who draws close to God. When we do that, he will bring refreshment to our soul. He'll bring growth in our lives. And we've said it through the weeks. We've been talking about a few ways that, you know, ingredients for growing in faith, but there are a million ways that we all grow in faith, and it looks different in every one of our lives. The last couple of weeks, we've talked about sharing God's love with others. And 2 weeks ago, we talked about hospitality, and that is when we invite people into our lives, into our homes, but really just into our lives. Go get coffee with somebody or lunch, but just open ourselves and invite people in, and we share God's love with other people in that way. And then last week we started, and we'll finish this week on talking about mission, when it's not inviting people in, but it's going to where people are and sharing God's love with them. So the key thought, when we share God's love with others through mission, we experience the joy of God's love flowing through us, and that grows us in faith. If you've been used, you know that God's used you in some way or another, there's no greater joy than knowing that God, he's just like Joe talked about, when God, he knew that God used him this past weekend. And there's no greater joy than that. And so when that happens, we experience God, we can't help but grow in faith. And so it is a great joy. I love the verse that we started off with. I'll sort of use that to launch into, because I think it's a perfect summary of how mission happens. Jesus was walking and he was with people and he healed this widow's, raised him to life. Didn't heal, he was dead. Raised him to life. And it said, God has come, because they knew God has come to help his people. They just knew this. God has come. And as a result of them knowing this, it said the news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding country. How did it spread? They just went out and told everybody because they knew that God had done something significant. They saw him raise the dead and they knew God had come. He has come. He's heard our cry. The Old Testament all the way through, he hears our cry and he answers our cry and he comes. And he brings comfort and he meets us in our desperation. He meets us in our distress. And when we experience that, it changes us to the core. So last week, if you weren't here, I don't have time to really review, but all this stuff is on our website under messages. And we upload everything you're seeing here. The PowerPoint slides are there. My notes that I'm looking at and also the audio. Everything's there. Last week we did a... I'll get to that in a minute. But we did use the verse, Ephesians 2, verse 10, we are God's workmanship created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. The idea of workmanship is that the root of that is poema, and it's also the root of the word poem. So the idea is you are, what is a poem? It's a unique expression of the heart of God. Each of us is a unique expression of the heart of God. He has designed and created us for unique and special good works of expressing his love to people around us. And that's an exciting thing. And I used to view that verse, I used to view that verse as kind of burdensome. You know, it does come, I skipped it this week, but Ephesians 2:8-9, is the gospel. I skipped it because I shared the other verse about Jesus healing or raising the widow's son to life. But that's the good news. And as a result of the good news, we go out, we just express. And so the transformational truth is that we're a masterpiece that God has designed, and he's put us to work. He's given us good works to do. It's not burdensome. It's a delight and it's a joy. So last week I think this slide is here. Yeah. So I love Rick Warren and Saddleback Church years ago came up with this acronym. Part of knowing what God has designed us to do and called us to do in mission is knowing how we're wired. And I love the acronym SHAPE. This is my son Micah who's waving, and one of his mentors, Coach B. Coach B takes him fishing, and Coach B has loved to fish since he was 8 years old, and he said, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. So he's turned his passion for fishing into mission and into ministry, and he loves it. He doesn't feel like he's working because that's what he does. And but SHAPE is, you know, we're uniquely designed. Spiritual gifts, we all have gifts. When you come to faith, God gives you special, unique gifts. Heart and passion, you have a heart and passion for specific, particular things that draw you, draw your interest. You have unique skills and abilities. You have a unique personality. We did a personality inventory last week, the DISC. It was 2 questions, and if you missed it, there are some extra sheets on the back table, or you can download it from the website, from the message. I've got it uploaded there. And that was fun, just to see and hear how we're each uniquely wired. And then our own life experiences oftentimes direct and guide our ministry. You know, people who have experienced very difficult things, maybe addiction recovery, that becomes the essence of who they are. They want to help other people. Or, you know, they've gone through cancer or another difficult, challenging illness or disease or loss of spouse through divorce or death or whatever it may be, it turns into a ministry and it becomes a very natural thing. By the way, on spiritual gifts, I do have a stack of spiritual gift inventories on the back welcome table. So if you don't know what your spiritual gifts are, if you want to take one, take it home, you can go through it, and that'll be a good way of kind of giving you an idea of what are my spiritual gifts. So we don't have time for it in this session, but you can take that with you and do that at home. Let's see. Evangelism styles. I mentioned last week we did personality. Years ago, did an evangelism style assessment, and it was a lot of fun. We did it with pastors, and it doesn't take very long. I've got the assessments out on the tables with pens. We're going to take a few minutes to do that here. Because at the end of the thing, when I went through it, every pastor in the room, they asked, you know, raise your hand if you have always been frustrated by evangelism. And most of the pastors raised their hands, because the style that often is presented to them is not the style that you carry. Sometimes it is, and you feel very affirmed, but oftentimes it's not how you're wired. And so you just feel like, well, I can't do that. And I'm just frustrated. And I walk around with guilt and shame because I just stink at evangelism, because we think we're supposed to be doing it a certain way. And really, evangelism is more who we are than necessarily what we do. We're just a walking expression of God's love. And this assessment, I thought was fantastic. It worked for me. It kind of set me free from that expectation. It helped me to see that who God designed me to be and the personality and all the things that I love, it's an intentional makeup, and it's how I really should be expressing faith. And I was affirmed in that. So I want you to be affirmed in that. No matter where you are with faith, you may be somebody who's, you know, kind of checking out faith. You're not totally there yet. You may be somebody who's been walking with God for 30 years and everywhere in between. But either way, I think this will be maybe an eye-opening, hopefully encouraging exercise. And so I want to take a minute and do this. I did it again yesterday, and it took me 5 minutes to fill it out. I think it's 36. Let me see. I've got mine here. I think it is, 36 statements. If you need one, there's kind of scattered around the tables. If you've got extra copies at your table, maybe, let us know. And Ray's kind of walking around. He can move assessments from one table to the next. But it's 36 statements, and you just read the statement and you rate from a, on a scale of 0 to 3. 0 would be this statement is not at all me. 3 would be this is very much me. And then at the bottom, you'll add up. So you'll see, try to explain this now so you're not confused when you get there. But you'll see the number at the very bottom, just plug and play. Like just fill in your answers at the bottom and you just fill them out where you're supposed to fill it out. And then add them up horizontally. Okay? If you have questions, you can let me know and I'll try to, hopefully that won't be confusing. And then once you do that, I'm going to read out what each of the descriptions is, a brief description. We've got it in the slides. So we're going to take a few minutes to do that, let you do that right now, and we'll come back and read the descriptions. Picture, by the way, was from a neighborhood men's retreat that we did about 5 years ago. And my evangelism style is interpersonal. And I think testimonial is the highest, but this kind of reflects sort of how we do ministry. And I just thought it was a fun, a lot of times when people think of mission, they don't think of a picture like this, right? And so kind of get us out of the box a little bit. But all right, so we'll take a few minutes. We'll walk through each one. And I know, you know, we have a high, you probably have a number one. Maybe you've got a couple that are tied for first, but you probably have top three. And it'll be very clear kind of what are the highest ones and what are the lowest. And by the way, there is a full sheet at the back table, several, I think there's about 50 copies of this that have all the descriptions. And there's a lot more information than we're going to see right now. So if you want that as you're walking out, go ahead and grab it. And it'll be on the website as well under the message for this week. All right, so let's walk through it. Evangelism styles. How many of you are direct? Was your highest one? Got a handful. We're going to have, you know, a good balance probably, and there are a handful of those here. So in conversations, I like to approach topics directly without beating around the bush. I don't shy away from challenging someone when it seems necessary. I do not have a problem confronting my friends with the truth, even if it strains the relationship. I think the world would be a lot better place if people would stop being so sensitive about everything and just speak the truth. Can you direct people relate to that? Like, yes, I heard an amen. A motto that would fit me perfectly is make a difference or a mess, but do something. I sometimes get in trouble for lacking gentleness and sensitivity in the way I interact with others. That's direct. There's a lot more, like I said, and I'd pick one up or download it on the website because it also shows maybe some cautions or some weaknesses, but these are mostly... And there's a lot of correlation with personality type. So on the DISC profile, I would say this is very much aligns oftentimes with a D-type personality, natural born drivers. And, you know, I had the conversation with somebody, I'm not this way, but I've got a friend who does a lot of sharing their faith on airplane trips, sitting in an airplane. They're in a plane for 2 or 3 hours. That fits a whole lot more their personality. They're a direct, more evangelism style. I'm more neighborhood. I'm more long, you know, term, develop relationship, and it kind of happens more that way. So modern day examples would be like William Lane Craig or Ken Ham. If you ever go on YouTube and you watch kind of debates and they're talking directly. Peter is one in the Bible in Acts chapter 2 when he gives his sermon. He's very direct. He's very, you know, confrontational, and it yields huge amounts of fruit. So that's direct. All right, intellectual. This is more about apologetics and debate. If you are prone more towards that, how many of you guys more intellectual where this was a number one for y'all? Okay, a handful. I have a hard time getting out of a bookstore without buying a bunch of new books that will help me to better understand what people are thinking. I tend to be analytical and logical. In conversations, I naturally key in on questions that are holding up a person's understanding or progress. I really enjoy discussions and debates on difficult questions. Often when listening to teachers or TV commentators, I mentally or even verbally argue with their position and logic. I like to get at the deeper reasons for opinions that people hold. How many of y'all, was this like a top three where you would say that kind of came up top three? Okay. Yeah. Yep. Josh McDowell, Lee Strobel, some guys that, you know, come to mind for intellectual. Testimonial. Testimonial is more relationally oriented. Storytellers, that tends more towards the I-type personality in the DISC profile, but it really can be all of them. Johnny Erickson Tada, you know, who dove into, she took a deep dive into a shallow lake and broke her neck when she was 18 years old. She's told her story her entire life. God gave her a story. That's how he's used her. This past weekend, we watched a testimony of Tom Papania, who was a former mafia guy, came to faith, and his whole ministry for 40 years now has just been telling his story. But testimonial, I often speak, how many highest, your highest was testimonial or top three? Okay, yep. I think that was my highest. Yeah. I often speak out of my personal background or experience in order to illustrate a point that I'm trying to make. I often identify with others by using phrases like, I used to think that too, or I once felt the way you do. When I talk around the locker room or drinking fountain, people really listen. You're a storyteller. People are drawn to what you have to say. I intentionally share my mistakes and struggles with others when it might assist them in considering solutions that could help them. People seem interested in hearing stories about things that have happened in my life. I'm still amazed at how God has worked in my life, and I would like others to know about it. You know, when we think about mission, when we think about sharing our faith, I think a lot of times we discount the power of our personal stories. It is. It's powerful. You know, when our lives are changed, it's undeniable. Interpersonal evangelistic style. These are people who just love people. I'm a people person who place a high value on friendship. People have commented about my ability for developing deep friendships. I'd rather delve into personal life issues than abstract theoretical issues. I prefer discussing a person's life before getting into the details of their beliefs and opinions. I enjoy long talks with friends, and it doesn't matter much where we are or where we're going. People generally consider me to be an interactive, sensitive, and caring kind of person. How many of you was interpersonal number one? How many was it like top three? Okay, yeah. You know, that has a lot to do sort of with why you're here. I mean, that's sort of the kind of the mojo, I think, the culture of this church. It's we try to be interpersonal, relational, and so you gravitate to that. Invitational. How many of you was invitational your number one? Or how about top three? Invitational. Okay, I'm high invitational. I enjoy adding or including new people in activities I'm involved in. To be honest, I often watch for situations and when someone better qualified can explain concepts to my friends. It's not unusual for me to attend special events or concerts and bring along a car full of friends. I tend to watch for worthwhile events to which to bring people, such as an enriching seminar, retreats, classes, or church services. I'm always looking for a good match between the needs and interests of my friends in various books, classes, and programs that they would enjoy or benefit from. A highlight of my week is when I can take a guest along with me to a helpful learning event, including church. That's invitational. You know, the woman at the well. Jesus told her everything she knew, and he said, I'm the one you were waiting. She went back to the village, and they all came out. She just told her story and invited them. Come, you need to come see who I'm talking to. Andrew did the same thing with his brother Peter. Come and see. Philip with Nathaniel. Come and see. Invitational. That can really be anybody on the DISC profile as invitational. And then the last one, and I think the one that gets discounted a lot in terms of mission evangelism is serving. Many of us, so how many of you guys, number one, came out serving number one? How about top three? It was you're in your top three. A lot of people serving. That's a big deal. I see needs in people's lives that others often overlook. I find fulfillment in helping others, often in behind-the-scenes ways. I'd rather show love through actions than through words. I've found that my quiet demonstrations of love and care sometimes help people open up and become more receptive to what I think. I think the world would be a better place if people would talk less and take more action on behalf of their friends and neighbors. I tend to be more practical and action-oriented than philosophical and idea-oriented. And the person that they give as an example. See if any of it, who can guess? Who comes to mind as a primary example of a servant-oriented person in Cravens? Martha, yes. Mother Teresa is one that comes to, that they used as an example, just serving. But yes, I agree. Cravens, we got a lot of servant people in this church. It's a blessing. A takeaway for this is, you know, when David was going to fight Goliath, it's important to know what you're good at and be who you are. David is going to fight Goliath, and Saul said, you know, here, put my armor on. Carry, take my sword. And David was like, I can't wear this stuff. It's too heavy. I can barely stand up. I can barely lift the sword up. I'm good with my slingshot. And he went and used a slingshot, won the battle. What's your weapon? What's your best? How are you wired? How did God create you to be? Don't feel like you got to put somebody else's armor on to go do what God's called you to do. So be free to be who you are. I'll wrap up. There's a lot more here. I'll say this too, you know, and this is freeing to know that when it comes to mission and other people, the light bulb going off in their hearts and their lives about who Jesus is and running to him and embrace him, we're not responsible for the harvest. We can't save anybody. I think I shared last week, somebody asked me a few weeks ago, said, oh, it was at the homeless shelter. How many people have you saved? Oh, you're a pastor. How many people have you saved? I said, none. That's what Jesus does. You know, we're not responsible for the harvest, but we get the joy and the pleasure of just scattering seed. Just throw seed everywhere. I read about that parable this morning in the daily Bible reading. Is some seed's going to go on the hard path, some is going to get caught up in the thorns and the rocks, and some seed is going to find good soil and grow up. And when you see that happen, you go, wow, look what God did. I was just scattering seed. So there's joy in knowing I'm not responsible to convert anybody. I can't do that. That's God's deal. But my goal is to share God's love through my words and through my deeds, not just one or the other. A few years ago, kind of the phrase hit me of love opens the door, but it's truth that sets people free. So we need them both. And oftentimes, you know, we just focus on truth and we just kind of bypass love and relationships. But love really, it softens people and it shows that we care. But love opens up the door for relationship, but it's truth that sets us free. So I'm going to skip through here to the end. I had six key learnings that I was going to share. I shared three of them last week. I'll just tell you what they are now. I don't have time to really get into them, but they're kind of self-explanatory. The ones last week is be yourself, be intentional. Busyness gets in the way of relationships. Busyness gets in the way of ministry. It's hard, but we have to prioritize our time and figure out what's really important. And be available, just prioritizing time with people. Again, that's hard, but it's important. And then this week, key learnings when it comes to mission, discomfort is actually a good thing. So push into discomfort. We know that with anything. Talk about growing in faith, pushing in. We don't grow. We really have an option of being comfortable or growing. It's hard to grow when you're comfortable. So we got to lean into that. There was a quote, Jatriela Murray said, if you push yourself just a little past your comfort zone, that's the sweet spot. So discomfort is a good thing. A lot of times that involves initiating conversation with people you don't know. That to me is the essence of discomfort and engaging people. And that's how seeds get spread, is just initiating. Somebody's got to initiate that. And if we can be the ones to initiate, who knows, it may go somewhere. As a part of the discomfort, this is a key point that I want to touch on. Your brokenness and your mess and your weaknesses are not liabilities. They are probably your greatest assets when it comes to ministry, when it comes to sharing the love of God, because it's how you connect with people. I touched on that last week. This pottery is a Japanese thing, Kintsukoro. Koroi, I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, but when pottery is broken, they use gold to repair it, and it becomes stronger than it was before, but it becomes beautiful, and its worth and value increases because it became broken. And it's a good illustration, it's a good example for us that our brokenness is actually incredibly useful to God. So don't hide it. Don't run from it. Lean into it, because everybody's broken. And when we engage and we're transparent and we're vulnerable about our brokenness, that connects us to people. That whole phrase about, you know, hey, me too, that connects us in our brokenness. Be kind is number five. Love works. Love works. When Laura and I moved into our neighborhood 21 years ago, kind of in my mind, I said, I want to meet neighbors, get to know them by name, begin praying that God would open up doors, that open up their hearts, give us opportunity. But, you know, there were three words that came to my mind. It was just, we want to love people. We want to serve people. We want to be a blessing. We want to be good neighbors. And God, we're just going to do that. And God did stuff with that. You know, I had some stats here because somebody was asking, well, is that really fruitful? And I look back, and this was years ago, but at that time, there were about 125 households that we had connected with. And just loving, serving, blessing, right? And the stats were 6 out of 10 of those became friends. We had good relationship with them. 5 of the 10 we were able to pray with or have a spiritual conversation that we were not really trying to initiate, but God just brought that about because we cared and we were had developed a friendship. 4 of those people became good friends where they could walk into our home anytime. We could walk into theirs. There'd be laundry on the couch. It didn't matter. So, you know, deep friendships. And then for every 10 of those neighbors, 2 of them, as best we could tell, ended up coming to faith or making a significant change in their life spiritually just by loving, serving, and blessing. So that might hopefully be an encouragement to you that when you love people, when you care for people, it does make a difference. Now, again, you may not be an interpersonal, you know, testimonial type personality. So you got to figure out what that looks like for you. And then the last would be just be prayerful. Be prayerful. Just pray. God, send somebody in my path today that I can be a blessing to. And you take it. You know, Lord, I don't know what I'm going to say. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I give myself over to you. Use me to be a blessing to the people around me and draw them and bring them into relationship with you through me. May not happen in the moment. Maybe a period of time, weeks, months, years, but use me. Use me on a daily basis. So wrapping up, closing quote, I love this. And there are a lot of resources at the back table. But closing quote, and I will say this, the book Get Real, there are 5 copies, I think, on the back table. If I had to pick one book on mission evangelism to recommend, that's it. And so if you want a copy, we've got some, you can order it on Amazon. If you want to give a gift, $20 is the suggested price. You can, there's a QR code you can scan to give, but you don't have to, okay? If you want a copy, grab it. But I love this quote by Henri Nouwen. My own desire to be useful, to do something significant, or to be part of some impressive project is so strong that soon my time is taken up by meetings, conferences, study groups, and workshops that prevent me from walking the streets. He's talking about just busyness. It's difficult not to have plans, not to organize people around an urgent cause, and not to feel that you're working directly for social progress. But I wonder more and more if the first thing shouldn't be to know people by name, to eat and drink with them, to listen to their stories, and to tell your own, and to let them know with words, handshakes, and hugs that you do not simply like them, but you truly love them. And that is where mission starts. And when we share God's love with other people through mission, as I said earlier, we experience the joy of God's love flowing through us. And when we experience that, we find that we're actually growing in faith. And that's good news for us today. So let me pray and we'll conclude our service. Father, thank you for encouraging us and how you have uniquely designed each one of us. There's several points of the idea of growing in faith as relates to mission. And that is one, that we would understand the gospel ourselves, that we would experience it for ourselves, your love, your grace, your unconditional kindness in our lives, that we would experience it. And that would give us a motivation and a desire to go share with other people. Look what God has done. And just to tell our stories and to have a passion and a burden, as Jesus had said, he had compassion over the people. He looked at the crowds and had compassion. Give us that same kind of compassion and use us in the lives of the people around us to come to know your love the way that you've done for us. We love you and we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.